Elizabeth Baird is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker, and she uses all these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with a reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Claire.
How are you doing today?
I am actually doing quite fabulously. Thank you for asking. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, I just feel a little under the weather today, but I'm getting through the day.
Good. Well, I will try to have my calm vibes, my calm energy floating around the studio for you today.
Oh, thank you.
Because it's interesting. I had an unexpected, spontaneous weekend retreat, and I just came back last night, and it's just been so nice to feel kind of slowed down and refreshed, and I don't know, just I guess I'm in an incredibly contemplative mood.
Where'd you go?
So I went up to Napa Valley. It's funny because I don't know if it's all like I was in Calistoga and I was in Santa Elena. I was never in Napa, so I don't know if it really constitutes Napa Valley, but needless to say, I was up in that area of the California geography, California land, which might be in a whole other state someday. But I went up originally for a memorial service for the father of childhood friends. My next door neighbors growing up, I've known since I was 5 years old. I've known their father since I was 5 years old. We grew up together and we had a classic, you know, 60s, 70s neighborhood where, you know, all the kids were in the street riding bikes. And we also had a creek that ran through our backyard, through all of our houses. And so we had amazing forts and picked berries and, you know, made our own concoctions. And on the other side of the creek was another town and houses. And we all had, it had one point been an orchard. So we all had orange trees and grapefruit trees in our backyards, very California. And so we would get into fruit wars with the kids on the other side of the creek, had our own kind of like battles. And so there was, it was a great childhood of this whole secret world of kids, you know, that going on down in the creeks. And then our families spent a lot of holidays together, a lot of Thanksgivings because my family's from the East Coast. So needless to say, I was very close to the Vieiras growing up. And their father passed away a few months ago, about 6 months ago. And so they had kind of a gathering lunch for everyone. And I wouldn't have missed it for the world. And so my sister and I decided to go up to the service. It wasn't a service, though. It was a lunch. It was actually a whole nother show because I would love to talk about how we remember those who have died and what kind of, we have a tradition of doing funerals, memorial services fairly close to after the person passes away. But this was months later, and I was thinking, what a nice thing to do once everyone's kind of been able to process some of their grief and get their feet underneath them again, and then to have this gathering months and months later when people who were there and really supportive right at the beginning have started to kind of fade away. It's another opportunity to gather with friends and family to tell stories and share their feelings and love for this person. And I think that's really a new way to look at supporting families who are going through grief. Because we tend in our culture to rush through kind of the memory process and then everyone kind of goes back to their life. But to do something 6 months, a year later, beautiful. So my sister and I decided to go up together. And then my sister brilliantly said, well, since we're going up and since we're both busy moms and busy working women and our lives get crazy, why don't we stay a couple days in Calistoga and refresh? And I said, well, that sounds a little bit decadent, but I am in if you're in. And so we did. We got a room at this place called Indian Springs Mineral Spa, which sounds pretty fancy. And it was built in 1910. This was this old geyser that's been producing mineral water, you know, for hundreds, thousands of years. And you go and you take to the waters and soak. So anyway, it ended up being this an unplanned, wonderful retreat from our day-to-day life and lots of long conversations. And it's not often, I don't know about you with your siblings, but there's not a lot of times that we get to have long interrupted gatherings together without our kids there or our parents there or other siblings. So it was nice. And we both travel well together and we are good at giving each other space, but then being you know, in conversation. And I was so excited when she suggested this because I have a bag full of unfinished magazine articles and books I've started and haven't read, and I'm sure like everybody does, and projects that I want to do and journals that I've started and avoided and probably avoided. That was a good Freudian slip, actually. Journals that I started and pushed to the side. And then, so I was so excited. I said, I'm going to bring this bag and I'm going to just indulge in going through all of these things that I always say when I have an uninterrupted period of time, I'll get into them. So it was this great mix of hanging out, having conversations, and I finished not one, but two books on disordered eating and women in the relationship with food that I'm going to talk about next week on the show. I'm still processing it, so I wanted to think through it. But I was able to finish those and really journal on it and think about it and kind of look for other research. Have you ever done tarot cards?
So, I did it at Live Oak. It was
That's right.
That's right. It was an emotional experience. Yeah.
So I, at one period of my time in life, was really into these mother piece tarot cards. They're round. I love them. The images are beautiful. Kind of fun things just to think about. I'm not a tarot card expert by any means, but I've always had interesting experiences kind of flipping my own tarot cards. And so over the years, people have given me different decks. And so I have animal spirit cards and goddess cards and angel cards and one called Das Energy cards, which are kind of interesting. They're hand-drawn. And then archetype cards. And so I thought this would be kind of fun just to flip all of these cards and just see what the meanings of these cards are. And it was freaky how in line from each of these five different decks, the little message to me was about, coming out of this period of time of searching and going through bouncing and coming into a time of like really going into my crone or wise woman or middle age space, kind of owning that, delving into the spiritual, and then that my future is about kind of walking into this inner wisdom, whatever that is. It was just crazy to me how aligned they were. And so I left the weekend thinking about retreats and all the different definitions of retreats and how powerful it was just to step away for two full days and be engrossed in just kind of thought, uninterrupted thought, but have conversation. And our conversations had a lot to do with retreats because we were talking about children and how much freedom we can give them. And when do you know it's okay to let them take off on their own? When should we be more interactive or more in charge of our children? And so we talked a lot about that dance we do about retreating and then charging in when it comes to parenting. And then I realized that actually in almost all of our relationships, from parenting to our relationships with our partners to our own personal life, the dance we do is figuring out when to retreat and give space and kind of respite and regroup and refocus, and then when to charge in and kind of make a stand or be involved or, you know, really kind of take charge of the moment. And so I thought it'd be interesting today to talk about kind of that dance of retreating and then charging in and how that dance plays out in our life when it comes to our partners, our children, and our own personal decisions. So that's where we're going to go. We're going to talk about retreats and charging in and what those look like in our life. How do you know when you need to retreat? Well, when you are exhausted, but also it's good to know when you need to retreat before you get to the point when you're exhausted. Just as when we're raising children, it's good to know when to retreat before everything blows up in the family. And with our partners, it's good to know when to retreat before you say things or do things that are difficult to take back. So you're going to be invited to be part of the conversation today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and our number is 805-781-3875. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Tyler puts them up very quickly, and you can research through and look for topics that you're interested in. There's years and years of shows. You can also podcast the show through Apple Podcasts or NPR One. Just look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and shows will be uploaded. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can also check out our website, The Reluctant Therapist. So lots of ways to get involved. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to start the conversation and open up the phones. A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Do you recognize that funky beat? Pick up the pieces. You know, before I come in to do the show, part of putting the show together for me is the music. The old disc jockey in me loves to kind of get lost in different songs and how it interacts with the show. And today I got down the rabbit hole of a lot of music from Daryl Hall's house in Hawaii. Have you seen those? He records albums with different artists at his house in Hawaii, and they're awesome and kind of different takes on different songs. And so I thought Pick Up the Pieces was appropriate for today, and I kind of like that groove, that sound, to get us in the mood for movement. Because when we talk about retreat, we're talking about movement. And we talk about charging in, we're talking about movement. And our life is really just a series of movements, moving into our relationships and then retreating back from them, or moving into our life fully invested and retreating back a bit to kind of regroup and refocus. And this ebb and flow of our life, if we trust that it'll continue moving, that if we kind of allow ourselves to move in and out of our experiences, we can have a fairly peaceful, pleasant flow. Doesn't mean that we're not going to have disruptions and grief and traumas and horrific experiences. That's part of the ebb and flow. But if we trust that there always is movement in our life, that we'll go through the good and the bad, that we can really find ourselves feeling at peace, feeling a sense of acceptance of what life has to offer us, and also kind of feeling this sense of peaceful awareness or peaceful preparedness, that we can enjoy the periods of time in our life when things are going well, but we're always kind of prepared if there is a time that we need to charge in or we need to change our energy and move forward. And I think that ultimately is kind of the goal of our aging process, just from my perspective, this growing acceptance of the ebbs and the flows. I think when I was younger, and maybe that's just part and parcel of being young, is there was a lot more, I had a lot more intensity about wanting to charge in on things all the time, that I wanted to make things happen and kind of be sure that I was forming and molding and having things go the way that I envisioned them to be. And I think that that's also a challenge for us, because there's a lot of messages that say you have to set intentions and have a focus and have your dream board and make sure you like see that goal that you're going for, which is, healthy and helping us have hope and focus and, kind of some place to head towards. But at the same time, if we get too wrapped around what that goal or that focus or that end game looks like, we are so intent on reaching that, we're charging so hard forward that we can get in our own ways quite often of seeing other opportunities or being accepting of the times when we need to change course. And then maybe, you know, when we're young, we're not encouraged to take those times of retreat, or that retreat is seen as somehow a weakness, that if we back off of something that somehow we're giving up or we're lazy and we're not, you know, trying hard enough. And so I think as I've aged, at least, I've noticed this grander acceptance of that flow between wanting to charge in and have my goals and have the things I want to have happen, and then accepting when they don't, and be able to retreat and regroup and reimagine what will happen and then move forward. What's been a great learning lesson in this retreat and charge in has been my kitchen project this summer that I've mentioned a couple times, that has become much more of a unfun party than it started off being at the beginning of the summer. And so talk about having to rethink my vision of where things were going to go and how the timeline was going to go, and having to kind of retreat and recharge and reimagine, which was another reason this weekend was really helpful. I appreciate my husband staying home and like sticking to the project and getting things done. But it was nice to be able to step away and kind of let go of the expectation that things would be done before 2019. And hopefully they'll be done by Thanksgiving. But I notice that I learn my lessons more quickly the older that I get. So let's start off talking about just the definition of retreat, because I really love looking at kind of the different ways that we look at a word and how it impacts us and how it impacts our life. So here we go. What is the first thing you think of when you think of retreat? You know, what is the very first image you have before I read the definitions? When I say retreat, what do you think?
Escape.
Okay. My first vision image of retreat is kind of this backing up, kind of quickly moving away from whatever is happening. So retreat is an act or process of withdrawing, especially from what is difficult, dangerous, or disagreeable. So that can be in relationships, that can be in situations that we know we shouldn't be in. You know, you get that vibe when you're in a place that you probably shouldn't be. So that retreat, according to Merriam-Webster, is an act or process of withdrawing, especially from what is difficult, dangerous, or disagreeable. It also is the process of receding from a position or state that you've attained. Maybe rethinking a position. Retreat is also a place of privacy or safety. Retreat is a place of privacy or safety, emotionally or physically, I would imagine. You know, if you're feeling bombarded or feeling overwhelmed, to retreat emotionally, physically, spiritually is a way of kind of protecting yourself from an intense situation or a dangerous situation. But then retreat also is a period when a group withdraws for prayer, meditation, study, or instruction under a director. So that idea of a classic retreat where you separate yourself from your day-to-day life and you go and meditate or do yoga or learn something new, that classic retreat that we talk about. And then there's the classic definition of retreat, which means to withdraw from enemy forces as a result of their superior power or a defeat, an act of moving back or withdrawing, which I find interesting, because if you think about retreat in relationships, especially if you're a parent, there are times when you can be going toe-to-toe, whether it's with a toddler or a teen, and you feel like as a parent, you know, this intensity of the interaction between the two of you is not going to end well. And so you can quite often feel like you're at war with your children, or even with a spouse or a partner or a friend, where you're just kind of toe to toe and neither person is backing down, or you're feeling like this is not going to end well. And so that act of retreating, being able to pull back a bit so that you can regroup, refocus, recharge, or rethink the position that you're taking. And I'm just always curious how it is people view the idea of retreating in their life. Like when you think of retreating from an intense situation and you think of taking a retreat, whether it's a meditative retreat or a spiritual retreat or a wellness retreat, do they both feel the same? Do they have the same impact on you? Do you feel like you're just moving away from your day-to-day for a bit to recharge? Or does it feel like you're trying to escape? Or does it feel like you're throwing up the white flag of defeat and like you can't handle things that are going on? I think how we envision what retreat means to us can really impact the what we get out of that period of time that we're retreating. You know what I mean? If you go into a retreat thinking, oh my gosh, I just can't do it anymore. Everything's too intense, too overwhelming. I have too much on my plate. I just can't keep up. I need to retreat. And then you go someplace and you put your feet up or try to rekindle yourself in some way. And sometimes I think that can feel like a defeat, not being able to keep up with the stressors of life. And so you're almost going away because you can't cope. And then I wonder if the retreat has that same healing benefit if you feel like you're retreating because you can't keep up. Because needing to retreat is an act of self-love. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago, that if we weren't at war with ourselves all the time, if we weren't in battle with our bodies and in battle with, you know, our expectations of who we are, how much more could we get done? And so if we looked at the need to retreat, to take time away for ourselves, and it doesn't mean you have to go to an expensive resort or even some sort of guided meditative experience. We can also create a retreat within our own life by, you know, disengaging from our media and our screens and our friends and our calendar and just kind of enclose ourselves in the sanctuary of our home. But if we can look at the idea of retreating as a healthy, important piece of recharging our mental health and well-being, I think we get different benefits from the experience. That if we know we're retreating, yes, life is intense and difficult, but I'm retreating because I'm going to care for myself and I'm going to love myself and nourish myself because I am worthy of that. Not that I am weak in some ways because I can't put up with the stressors of my life, but really because I am of value and having my sense of wholeness protected and nurtured is important. You're going to get more from that experience. And it's the same when we think of retreating from a relationship or an intense situation with our children or with our partner. If we look at, you know, sometimes couples, when they fight and disagree and have conflict, the intensity of that burrowing in and needing to win and feeling like if I back down, I'll look weak in this relationship, or if I back down, they'll take advantage of me. You know, you can have two people that are so intent on winning that their life becomes a battle, that relationship becomes a battle, and that need to win and to not look needy or small can cause relationships to kind of blow up, that to in some ways to be unrepairable. And so if we can look at retreating as not a giving in or a letting the other person roll over us, but if we see this act of retreating as an opportunity to self-nurture, to take a breath, to look at the situation from a different perspective, if we can think of retreating emotionally in our relationships the way we think of taking a retreat, a meditative break from our life, you can get a lot more healing in that relationship. And then to carry it one more step, think about that retreating with your children. If you're feeling like you're going toe-to-toe with your toddler or your teen, which seem to be two of the most intense times of parenting, if you feel like you are charging in and, you know, really creating a lot of tension, or even if your teen or toddler creating a lot of tension and they feel like they're on the war path, because I definitely have felt like that with my children, that they come in ready to, you know, bowl me over and they've got an agenda and they're just so intense and coming at me, that instead of getting back in their face and trying to hold my position and make sure that I'm the strong person or have authority in my household, instead of holding that space, if I were to retreat, withdraw from a disagreeable or difficult position and kind of catch my breath and take care of my mental health, that what I come back to my children with is going to be a much more healthy, loving, effective response. So both ways of looking at retreat, whether it's a physical retreat from our life and taking some time to ourselves, or that emotional retreat from relationships, they both have the same opportunities for self-care, self-awareness, taking care of our physical and emotional self, and creating stronger, healthier relationships in the long run. And the thing to think about is, what is it that you're trying to retreat from? What is that goal of retreating? Why are you retreating? Are you retreating from this intimate relationship because you need some space to think and then re-engage and grow the relationship? Or are you retreating because it feels too intense and you don't know how to move forward, and so now you want to kind of hide out? And that's where things get dicey. Because if you're using a retreat in an emotional relationship to just escape something that feels uncomfortable, that can leave your partner feeling abandoned. That can end up causing a greater rift in the relationship. So how we retreat, how we take time away from a relationship, from our day-to-day lives, is as important as how we move forward. So that if we are going to pull back to kind of think about what's happening and get a bigger perspective or a different perspective, we have to make that clear to our partners, to our children. Say, so, you know, I'm just going to take some time away right now. I'm going to retreat back a little bit. I'm going to have us both retreat. And so we can think about it and come at this from a different perspective, because our goal is to love each other. Our goal is to be connected. Our goal is to be supportive. But right now we're just at war. So why don't we both take a breath and kind of get a different perspective and come back and revisit this? That conversation is incredibly important. Otherwise, you set up greater disharmony, greater chance of problems. And what you might find is, if you retreat too quickly without letting those you love know why you're taking time away, then you might see their response as one of charging towards you. Like, where are you going? Why are you running away? Why don't you want to be in a relationship with me? Why aren't you dealing with this? Why won't you talk to me now? And so you kind of set up this retreat and charge in dynamic, where one person's trying to back away and the other person's charging in because they feel anxious and unsure of what's happening in the moment. So where are you in this world of retreats? Have you taken time out to retreat for yourself? Have you taken some time away and gained a new perspective in your life? And how has it changed you? How has it made a difference in who you are? I know that I came back today feeling incredibly relaxed, for one thing, but also feeling like I have more energy for whatever comes my way, and also feeling the sense of accomplishment that I was nurturing to myself in a way that I don't often take time for at home. It feels indulgent to just read a book and write about it and think about it. Unfortunately, it feels indulgent, but to have done that feels like I have more energy for other things that are taxing me in my life. So I'm going to open up the phone lines, and I'd like to hear from you. Where do you find yourself in the world of retreat? And what about in your relationships? How are things going with your partners? Or as a parent, we're getting back to school. This is a great time of year where we start to have showdowns with our children, getting ready to go back to school, conflict about getting into a new routine, expectations for our children. How is that going for you? How do you do with that parent piece? How are you at knowing when to back off and knowing when to charge in? Because that is a big part of the parent world. How do I know when I should charge in and defend my child, or charge in and speak up for them? And how do I know when I should retreat and let my child figure things out for themselves? And it may surprise you to know that you should be spending a lot more time retreating when it comes to your children than you should be charging in. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation today. 805-781-3875. This is a talk show, so you calling in is a big part of what we do here. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back in a moment to take your calls. Pick up the pieces. Pick up the pieces. Pick up the pieces. Pick up the pieces. I could actually continue just listening to. Let's turn it up just a little bit more. Isn't it? What does that remind you of, Tyler?
I don't know. There's a sound in there that reminds me of something, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
What does it remind you of?
Well, I picture my group of friends when we were, I want to say high school, and just kind of like that music's playing in the background and that like great vibe music and feeling free and feeling young and, you know, just feeling like everything you do is cool and hip.
Okay. I was going to say part of it, that saxophone, the reed in there, kind of reminds me of playing recorder in high school.
That's a totally different experience. Did every young person have to play the recorder?
I think it is part of growing up.
It is a rite of passage. Because it's funny, in my house cleansing, I came across my daughter Kelly's recorder. From childhood.
Such a beautiful instrument, right?
It's such a simple instrument. And I actually also have the recorder. I don't know if it's a recorder. What's the other brother of the recorder? But it's my dad's from when he was young. And I don't know how I ended up having that, but I do. So, you know, my dad's 80. So when was he, you know, playing the recorder? Which is bizarre. So you went a totally different direction. I was kind of thinking of kind of that vibe and knowing that you're kind of cool and thinking about like that parenting thing. And I don't know if your parents, would you say that they were the type to charge in to your life and or were they retreaters?
Yeah. I was the baby by a lot and an only child for a lot, and they were very invested in my life growing up.
So
maybe too much sometimes. So right. there was no retreating. We're a confrontation family.
So if there's a sense of wrongs being done, they want to right them.
Oh, absolutely, and right then and there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so,
which is carried on to me too, and through my life, because not everybody is like that, and so I want to resolve everything right here, right now, and get it on. Not everyone works that way.
So you like to take a stand.
I do.
Interesting.
We don't run away from things too much. When sometimes maybe we should.
But and it's so interesting because your response was kind of run away from. And I think that's what people mistake retreating for, right? Is that there's only two ways in life. I'm either charging in and making it right, confronting the situation, dealing with the conflict, or I'm running away, which sounds kind of cowardly. You know, you envision soldiers running down the hill, willy-nilly. And that running away. But really, if you think about it, retreating is much more of a thoughtful way of actually dealing with the situation. You know what I mean? Like, as opposed to confronting it in the moment and hashing it out, retreating means, you know, I respect your space and I also respect my own and our mental health and well-being. And so for both of us, we're going to back away for a little bit and retreat into our thought or into our space or into our hearts and then re-approach the situation. And when it comes to parenting, and I'm thinking modern parenting, so I'm kind of going through my own experience and I'm thinking of my mom when we were kids. You know, there was kind of a shift when we were kids and there was problems at school. My parents' first response was, what did you do to piss off your teachers? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, in what way were you responsible for this? Mm-hmm. And then there's been kind of this change. And I was probably more like that. If I were to be honest, my kids would probably call in and say, my first response always was, it's your job to figure out what your teacher wants and, you know, do that. But
giving me full flashbacks right now.
A little PTSD. But then we've come into this space in the last 20 years or so where parents have fallen on the side of wanting to charge in on their children's behalf and assume always that they're, you know, that they need to fight the battles for their child or their child needs to be defended or these, you know, people are need to be told, and especially coaches. I don't know how anyone coaches anymore, which is another show we're doing in a couple weeks, because I've been talking to coaches about parent behavior on the sidelines, and there's a whole Facebook page about parent showing videos of parents on the side. It's like, this idea of we've confused, you know, protecting our children with actually just kind of dominating and taking over their lives. And as controversial as it may sound, when it comes to raising your children, you probably shouldn't believe them so much as a parent. You probably shouldn't just take your child's story for face value and believe everything is as it is and then run into the situation and try to correct it. You know, because children are learning about life, and their first mechanism is to thrive and to be safe. And they're going to spin a story just like most of us are going to spin a story so that they look good. Very rarely is anyone to come home and say, well, here's what happened. And in all honesty, I'm half to blame for the situation. Like, how many times in your life have you actually said that? I'll take half blame for the situation. Most of the time when we have conflict with someone, especially when we're young, we want it to look like we are the victims. And so parents have this tendency to want to jump in right away and write it for their children. But that's problematic in many ways. One is it diminishes our children's ability to speak up for themselves and to handle situations, and also to learn and accept that things in life aren't always fair, that you're not, you know, even if you're the most qualified or the most talented or the, you know, most popular, you're not always going to get chosen, you know, selected, recruited for the things you think you want. And so as parents, we have to be okay with suffering the pain our children are feeling. Because a lot of times parents rush in almost not as much for their children, but to try to numb or deal with the own pain they're feeling on behalf of their child. Does that make sense? You know, that the feeling is, if I rush in and, you know, I can't stand or I can't hold the pain that my child's feeling because they didn't get into a class they wanted or they didn't get chosen or selected for something that they definitely were qualified for, and I feel so much pain about it, I'm going to run in and try to write it so I don't feel so uncomfortable, which is kind of a misguided approach to these situations, because our job is to help our children develop resilience in the inevitable disappointments of life. And if we're not comfortable with our own pain, or we're not able to sit with the disappointment for our children, then we're truly never going to allow them to learn to sit with their own pain and disappointment. And so there's where we come to the kind of dance of, when do we charge in and when do we retreat? Because we don't want to retreat so much that our child also feels unsupported or that we don't care. So there's that piece of, I want to show empathy and I want to show love for the disappointment. I don't want to, you know, ignore that my child's uncomfortable. I want to acknowledge that, but at the same time also help them learn and model ways to react to disappointments that is healthy. Because really the measure of our life is not trying to avoid disappointment or avoid things that happen, because horrible things are going to happen all the time. So really our measure in life is how we respond to disappointments and how we respond to things that happen that we didn't want. So I guess, you know, I'm curious where we are with our parenting now. Do you know when to rush in? Do you feel like you need to rush in? Most people don't want to admit to that either, that they rush in too quickly. Do you hold that space? Are you able to retreat and allow your child to kind of face what's going on in their life and give them love but not take over? And if you look at, you know, parenting and partnering and ourself, the whole goal is the same. As parents, as partners in ourself, we tend to get in this dance of either smothering too much or providing or offering too much freedom. And as parents, if we smother too much, then our children never develop the skills they need to be successful adults. But at the same time, we also can allow too much freedom too soon for teenagers, even for younger children as well. You know, teenagers still need boundaries. They kind of like to have boundaries because the world is new and ever-changing for them at all times. And so we don't want to just push our teenager out there and say, you have to figure it out on your own. You know, it's okay to say, hey, this is going to be movie night on Friday night, or no, you're not going to go out with your friends for the fourth night in a row. But a lot of times teenagers will keep pushing forward and pushing forward until someone says, that's the boundary. Now you're going to stay home and sleep. And they'll push back and they'll say, you're mean and you're the only parent. But secretly, trust me, inside they're relieved when you say, the freedom ends here and we're going to kind of regroup. Our teens need to learn when to retreat because they don't naturally have that. Even my 20-something has a hard time knowing when to retreat. You know, I worry about her because she pushes and pushes and pushes herself because there's so many fun things to do and so many opportunities, and she wants to be strong and she wants to be capable and she wants to, you know, do everything in the world. And learning to retreat and self-care and regroup and refocus and regenerate and recharge is equally important in our adulting skills as it is learning to charge forward. So I'm curious about your experience with that. I think we're in a crossroads as parents when it comes to being too smothering and allowing too much freedom. And I think parents are kind of at war with each other at this moment because there's a contingent of parents that say we need to give kids more freedom, free range parenting, let them, you know, go off and make their own decisions, let them fail and flaw and then fail and fall apart. And then there's another faction of parents that say, no, the world is dangerous and scary and we need to keep them safe and we need to make sure that they're taken care of, and we're kind of bumping up. So I'd love to know where you stand on this. And then when it comes to our relationships, it's the same thing. We can get into a dance with our partners where we become either too smothering or we allow way too much freedom, that we're not connected at all. And so we're, you know, always trying to figure out how vested should I be in this partnership? How vested should I be with my spouse? How much time should I spend making sure they're safe and have what they need? And then how much kind of freedom do I let them have to go out and be themselves in the world? It all boils down to, with parents and partners and ourselves and taking care of ourselves, it boils down to all of us wanting to feel or be autonomously connected. We want to be autonomously connected to our children, to our partners, and to ourselves, that we want to have the sense of freedom to have our thoughts, to make our choices. But at the same time, we want to know that there's a backup, that there's a safety net, that there is a witness to what we're experiencing who has our back and is going to experience and empathize with us what we're experiencing. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My number is 805-781-3875. Love to hear your thoughts on this. This lofty idea of retreats, that physical, emotional, and psychological withdrawal that we take from stressors. We take retreats from relationships. We take retreats in our day-to-day. We also take retreats to a physical location to regain perspectives. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but Jiddu Krishnamurti.
Your guess is as good as mine on that one.
Thank you. Krishnamurti talked about it being essential to go into retreat at various times in our life, to stop everything you're doing, to stop actually even your beliefs and your experiences completely and start to look at them anew. I mean, I thought that was interesting, that it's not just stepping away from the daily stressors, away from the toxic effects of noise. We don't think about how noisy our lives are on a day-to-day basis, you know, not only with televisions and music and screen, but traffic and people. And so to retreat from the toxic effects of noise, too much information, unrealistic demands, not only do we need to retreat from them to recharge our physical and emotional well-being, but he also talks about retreating from what we do day to day to stop your beliefs and experiences, step away and look at them from a new perspective. Are these beliefs that I'm living by serving me? Or are they in the best interest of my family? Or are these beliefs even founded on something solid? Because beliefs are really just a reaction to a series of feelings we had in similar situations. And when we have that same reaction to similar situations, it starts to become a belief. You know, whether we believe something is safe, or we believe something is wonderful, or we believe, you know, that we are worthy of love or not, you know, a series of experiences and events and our reactions to those events create our beliefs. So this idea that we need to step away from those beliefs and experiences and look at them and really challenge, am I seeing them clearly, will help us to change so that we don't keep repeating our same choices or mistakes over and over again, like machines, that solitude helps us rethink it. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Diana, what's on your mind today?
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm going to address the issue you were talking about with retreat in relationship.
Okay.
A very topical item for me recently. I've been reading a book by Dr. Patricia Allen called Getting to I Do.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of that?
I have not.
Well, I hadn't either until about a week or two ago, and I've been reading it pretty nonstop ever since. And she talks about the concept of feminine and masculine mm-hmm. in relationship mm-hmm. and how it's so important to have that be a balance. Mm-hmm. And it actually kind of is in all relationships, not just a love relationship.
True.
And that in an ungendered, biased society, it doesn't matter which person is the masculine energy and which is the feminine energy, so long as there's an agreement that one is and the other one is the opposite.
Mm-hmm. That there has to be kind of that yin and yang, right? The two
uh-huh.
sides coming together to make a whole.
Yeah.
And how
and I think that...
Go ahead.
Oh, I think that whole comment you were making about parents rushing in on children, you know, that's kind of a masculine energy. That's the action, the doing, the advancing. And in a love relationship, where the masculine is thinking and doing and providing and all of that, the feminine is more receiving and retreating and encouraging and supporting. Mm-hmm. I've learned that this is the opposite of the way I was raised and the way I have always been. I've been more very assertive and very pushing my agenda and very much, you know, in the masculine energy of instructing and telling and rushing in and, you know, all those things that we as parents do when we smother our children, I was doing and smothering in my love relationship. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm learning that I was getting the same results over and over again and not liking it. And she explained why. Mm-hmm. And when a woman is more, or the feminine energy, whether it's in a male or female body, and this works equally well in men as long as there is the opposite feminine energy or masculine energy to balance it, I learned that the feminine energy is pulling energy. It pulls and creates a space. I think I heard you talking about creating a little space mm-hmm. so that this little child or the person in your relationship can process and think and experience and feel and kind of be themselves and be honored in that space. And then that pulling energy of the quiet and the retreat, that will pull them out mm-hmm. so that then they can be themselves and be able to express themselves in a way that the opposite pushing energy kind of squelches.
And so what has changed for you? I know it's recently you've been reading it, but what do you feel has shifted for you now in wanting to move forward?
Well, I feel that I'm in a period of retreat right now mm-hmm. in a relationship, and I'm going deep into my own self, too, to just cultivate these changes and these things I've been learning, but also just allowing my partner to come forward and express more the feelings and things that I possibly was smothering, being smothering about. Mm-hmm. Just allowing that retreat to happen and let someone else come forward and express themselves. I think that's going to be very, very productive in the days ahead.
No, it's beautiful. Beautiful, Diana. You just spelled it out in a way that I think is so easy to hear, that, you know, being able to retreat is challenging because the charging in is also about love. And so it's learning that our love can be expressed in moving in and also pulling back a bit to make space. And when we've been someone who's charged in often, our partners can take a while to step into that space. You know, you may have this awakening and say, I'm going to retreat now and then allow space and they'll move in. But when someone hasn't had that opportunity for a long time in a relationship, when that dynamic has been different, it can oftentimes take them a while to move forward. You know,
yes.
So to not get frustrated if they don't step in and step up in a timely manner, because you've had this awareness, but it might take them longer to realize that that space has been created and that it's safe.
Yes, yes, that's a very good point too, and that's something else that I'm working on is the patience, and then, you know, struggling with my own nature to rush in and just be patient long enough. And that's a way of loving, that bring forth that patience.
Mm-hmm. And then also, what do we do with that time while you're in retreat? It's also, as you said, it's not just about waiting for your partner to have the space to come forward, but it's what you're doing for yourself in the retreat, because you probably have focused so much love and energy on your partner that you haven't focused that same love and energy on yourself. And so in this time of retreat, you turn inward and start to nurture and love those parts of yourself that you might have been ignoring.
Exactly. You said it perfectly. I couldn't have said that better. And that is exactly what I'm focusing on right now, because what I learned in her book is that a woman doesn't fall in love with a man. She loves herself and shares the love with the man. Mm. And if she doesn't love herself best, then she can never really love her man, because then she's not going to be able to stand up for her principles and say no when something is not comfortable. Mm-hmm. Because the no is the big, you know, I love myself better than this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm learning to love myself in a deeper way than I ever have in the past.
And isn't that amazing to think that there is a whole love relationship that you've yet to experience, and it's right there waiting to happen. And I don't know if it is something that can, to be honest, I don't know if it's something that can happen before we're of a certain age. I think we're so busy looking for a partner, creating family, you know, that making our careers, making our life, that there really isn't time to go inwards and do this work. I'm guessing you and I are closer in age to do that inner work. And I think a lot of young women and young men feel frustrated when they're younger that they're not loving themselves. And I need to love myself and I need to do more, and beat themselves up for it. When in reality, it is part of that kind of aging process, that we love ourselves in different ways in different periods of time in our life. And that when you reach midlife, that is that opening where you get to love yourself autonomously from everyone else.
Yeah, I think that's a good point in terms of self-discovery, because this was a self-discovery thing for me. I think there are people who are fortunate enough to wonder and have a mentor to show them the way in this path earlier in life.
Mm-hmm.
Those are indeed very fortunate people.
Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing is that you will take this knowledge and you will become that light or that mentor, I think, for people coming up behind you. And that's what really makes us feel, that's what makes us powerful, is when we're able to take these things we've learned, then we model that for those who are coming up behind us so that they feel free to have the same experiences. And also this idea that we need both the masculine and feminine in our lives, that there are times in our relationship where we'll express the masculine and then we'll express the feminine, and our partners will express the masculine and the feminine, that we really do shift those energies within our relationship as well.
Yes, I think that's right. The shifting of those relationships, also this masculine and feminine, she, in this book, Getting to I Do, she explains how you can renegotiate who's taking on which energy, mm-hmm. you know, once your relationship is established, because needs arise, and sometimes the other partner needs to take the lead.
Exactly.
But as long as you negotiate, she says, it works beautifully to have one person do the masculine energy and the other one the feminine, and then you can renegotiate when you need to switch again.
It is. It's all about the communication and the being open and aware. And I've noticed that a lot with retired couples, that when the man retires, they tend to move into more of a feminine space and take up more of those feminine duties that their wife did for years and years. And a lot of time women find their independence and their voice and are stepping outside of the home. So you can see that shift, whether it's actually negotiated verbally or just kind of falls into it. Can you, Diana, tell me one more time the name of the book for people who might be interested?
Getting to I Do by Dr. Patricia Allen.
Thank you so much. Thank you for calling in and sharing your story. You were the perfect call today.
Oh, and I wanted to add one more thing. She does address what you just said also, and it has to do with hormones.
Like
male
everything.
Male hormones dropping later in life makes them more feminine, and female hormones, testosterone that I'm speaking of, increases, and our estrogen decreases, makes us more aggressive later in life. And so it works out.
It does. if we stay true to ourselves. Diana, thank you for calling. So this has been a conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Check out our Facebook page or Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT, to leave messages, comments. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast. I look forward to continuing this conversation. I hope you'll think about retreats and caring for yourself physically, metaphorically, in relationships, with your children. And I look forward to continuing on next week. Thank you for supporting Public Radio KCBX.
It was in another lifetime, one of toil and blood. The blackness was a virtue, and the road was full of mud. I came in from the wilderness, a creature void of form. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. And if I pass this way again, you can rest assured I'll always do my best for her, on that I give my word. In a world of steel like death and men who are fighting to be warm, come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Not a word was spoke between us, there was little risk involved, and everything up to that point had been left unresolved. Try imagining a place that's always safe and warm. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. I was burned out from exhaustion, buried in the hail, poisoned in the bushes and blown out on the trail. Haunted like a crocodile, ravaged in the corn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Suddenly I turned around, she was standing there, silver bracelets on her wrist, flowers in her hair. And she walked to me so gracefully, took my crown of thorns. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from a storm. Well, the deputy walked. walks on hard nails and the preacher rides a mount. Nothing really matters much, it's doom alone that counts. And the one-eyed undertaker, he blows a funeral horn. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Babies wailing like a mourning dove. An old man with broken teeth, stranded without love. Do I understand your question, man? Is it hopeless and forlorn? Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. Well, I'm living in a foreign country, but I'm bound across the line. Beauty walks a razor's edge, someday I'll make it mine. If I could only turn back the clock to when God and her were born. Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm.